Welcome back to Teaching Tuesdays. If you remember 2 weeks ago, we had a little hiatus from the literary terms. 2 weeks ago was just a heads up to give you the update as to how we were going to do 2 weeks ago and then last week. And of course, last week was the end of The Magician's Nephew, where I talked about, you know, everything that you need to know in the novel. And so today we are back on track, finished going to do the second to last installment of the literary terms lesson. So today we are going to skip letters L, K, and N as a nest, and we're going to do M, O, and P. All right, as I said in the introduction, we're going to do M, O, and P. So we're going to start with M. And there's only three that I want to talk about. So the first one is mood. This is the feeling, that feeling or vibe that the readers get through the words and descriptions. Not exactly the same thing as tone, but it's what the reader feels. The next one is a motif. This is an object or idea that represents itself through literary work. If you remember last week, I talked a little bit about some of the motifs in The Magician's Nephew. So that is the overall definition if you didn't pick that up. It's the object or idea that represents itself through a literary work. And the last M that I want to talk about is a metaphor. This is, if you haven't picked up on the examples I've given so far in literary terms, a metaphor is a figure of speech in which a word or phrase is applied to an object or an action to which is not literally applicable. So simile is a comparison of two things that uses like or as. Metaphor is still that comparison of two things, but it doesn't use like or as. That's kind of the brief sum up of the difference between the two. And that ends the M portion of today's lesson. Alright, so we're going to move on to the O section. There's only two things I want to talk about in the O's. If you remember, we're skipping N, going straight to O. So the first one is onomatopoeia. That's when the words that are used sound exactly like what the name is. So like cuckoo and sizzle, snap, crackle, pop. That's onomatopoeia. The second one is an oxymoron. This is not meaning that someone's stupid. It's a figure of speech in which apparently contradictory terms appear to work together in conjunction. For example, faith, unfaithful, kept him falsely true. So that's kind of a rough example, but it's when you have two things that are what is seem to be in contrast with each other, but they work together to make something work and something, you know, it becomes clear. All right, we're going to end today's episode with the P's. So you are going to need to get a pen and paper if you need to write down the differences, because there will be one thing that has multiple subcategories within the one term. So just hold on, make sure you have that pen and paper with you if you need it. This segment is over the P's. This will be the last segment in today's episode. So the first one is a paradox. Now this is another figure of speech. It's when a seemingly absurd or self-contradictory statement or proposition that when investigated or explained may be proved to be well-founded or true. So something that, you know, somewhat like situational irony or dramatic irony, whatever you want to call it, doesn't seem to be, contradicts itself, but actually is true. Yeah, first you have to kind of do a double take on that. That's a paradox. Okay, the next one is personification. This is when you have something in nature or something that's non-human, inanimate objects that take on the qualities of human characteristics. So Toy Story would be a good example of personification. The toys, they really aren't alive, but they take on that human characteristics. They take on human, you know, facial expressions, talking, movements, however well they can for the toys, but that is personification. Perspective is the next one. This is just a particular attitude towards or a way of regarding something. It's a type of point of view. It's, you know, how do you see it from your perspective? So let's say that in the show Chuck, whenever Chuck has to do his red test, from Sarah's perspective, whenever she sees it, she thinks that Chuck is the one that killed Perry. But in reality, it was actually Casey. And we know that because Chuck turned around and saw Casey there, and he talked with Casey about it. So it really just depends on your perspective of what, how you see something. Alright, so point of view, I kind of mentioned that earlier. So point of view, this is the one that you're going to need your pencil and paper if you need to be able to know, okay, goes with this, this goes with that, this goes with XYZ. Alright, so point of view is just, as I said, kind of goes along with perspective. It's just a particular way of considering something or an attitude. So there's three different types, three different subtypes, and then one of them has multiple versions of that subtype. So first person is the first type of point of view that I want to talk about. This is when the main character is telling the story. They use the words I, me. So it's, you know, the narrator is the one doing all of the action. So pretty much through the eyes of the main character, you could hear their thoughts. You get to see how they see everything, see how they react, what their actions do, so on and so forth. Second person, this is usually only used when you're doing instructional writing, so like tech writing, that sort of thing. This is told from the perspective of you. So like first you stand up, then you take a step, so forth. That would be second person. And usually you don't see a lot of this because in fiction, just because it's very hard to do that in fiction. It's easier to do it in instructional writing. And then the last is the third person. This is the one that has the multiple categories within the subcategory. Third person is when your narrator is not the main character or a character in the story. Sometimes that's not true, because in The Great Gatsby, that would be third person. But in a way, since it's kind of like a frame story, but it'd be more first person. But you can see how some of it would be third person, just because it's a frame story going back and telling, hey, this is what this did, this is what I did. So, yeah. All right, so how you identify third person is there's lots of he, she, it, and the narrator is the most common, and this is the most commonly used type of point of view, just that way you can see everything that's going on. You have a little bit of that dramatic irony going on. So the first type of third person is limited. This means that your point of view is limited to only one character. So it's kind of similar to first person in that it only follows one character, but it's still third person in that it uses he, she, it, and doesn't use the personal pronouns of I, me, that sort of thing. So the narrator only knows what that one character knows. You can also choose to view the actions from right inside their head or from further away, where the narrator has more access to information outside of the main character's viewpoint. It really just depends on the author's, what they decide. The next one is multiple. This still uses the he, she, it type of pronouns, but now the narrator can follow multiple characters in the story, still getting more to that dramatic irony where you get to see what's going on, but characters might not get to see it. It's not fully, but you're still leaning more towards that way. It's kind of like middle of the road. This one's challenging. The challenge in this is to make sure that the reader knows when you're, the switch is made from one character to another. This is very hard for authors because they have to use chapter breaks or section breaks in order to help us, the readers, know, hey, we're moving from one character to another. And the last one is omniscient. This is like the furthest away from limited on the spectrum scale. This is you know, you still use the he, she, it type of pronouns, but the narrator knows everything. It's kind of like, you know, Morgan Freeman as God, and he's seeing everything. He's narrating what's going on, or Kevin Hart, or whoever you want to narrate what's going on. They know what everything that's going on. They can see everything. They know the situations, and they can tell you, hey, this is what's going on. This is what happened. But the characters still don't know what the other people are doing. They can't hear what the narrator's saying. It's like the narrator's in a little box with a microphone that's linked to the radio, and only everyone who has the radio can hear, and everyone that the narrator's watching does not have a radio on or a radio available to them, so they only know what's going on immediately around them or when the information comes to them. And then the last one I want to talk about today, so that's the end of the point of view. We're moving on to the last item on the list of P's, and that would be a prologue. So this is that separate introductory section of a literary, sometimes even a musical work. This goes hand in hand with the epilogue. So usually if you have a prologue, you have an epilogue. And if you remember back to the E's, epilogue is that little chapter section at the end of the story. Just kind of helps wrap it everything up, make that conclusion, resolution fit.